Welcome to the Terror Dome, baby.
We swarm.
Welcome to the Terror Dome.
We swarm. Let them know.
We swarm, baby.
We swarm, baby. All day long.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back, baby. Second episode on YouTube, another episode of Tales from the Terror Dome. You know how we get down. Another hokey great on the podcast today, baby. The God MC.
That's right.
That's what the streets say. But tackling machine, Virginia Tech DB in the golden years. Man, y'all might know him as Mike Crawford, number 21 in the fields, number one in your heart. My man, how you doing?
Oh, man, I'm blessed and highly favored to be here. And just thanks for having me on, Dan. I appreciate you, man.
Nah, man, absolutely. Where are you from for the people that may not know?
Okay, hometown is Baltimore, Maryland. Born and raised.
Born and raised, man. Crab cakes and football.
Gotta have it.
But you started out an unusual way. I believe you came out at 2 pounds, and the doctor had to revive you.
Yeah. Slapped me on the behind and the chest a few times. I was premature and coming out of Johns Hopkins Hospital. We call it the Old Castle Grayskull. because it looked like one of those old vintage with the Tartarian type or deals. I was born premature coming out of good old Johns Hopkins Hospital, born on February the 20th, a good day.
Yeah. And then for all you uncultured people, Castle Grayskull is a He-Man reference.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm telling my age, man.
Yeah. He-Man was like that. He-Man was like that.
Yeah, man.
But they say that you came out premature, but eventually they couldn't stop you, man. You ran everywhere. You ran to the store. You ran to school. You ran everywhere. Like some Forrest Gump. Like, man, once I started running, I was running. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. True indeed. Yeah, everywhere. Man. Yeah. Those are old stories right there too. Yeah, man. You going back. Because most definitely like to go into that. It was not just running for exercise, but it was also running to keep myself safe. It's a crazy city here at times.
Yeah. I've been to Baltimore a couple times. Like, I'm in Northern Virginia. Most of my experiences have been like Camden Yards or like Inner Harbor. I did watch The Wire every episode. Okay. Like 3 or 4 times. Like, I'm very, like, yeah. So they say like that was legit. Yeah. Like, that's what Baltimore was like.
It was tough, and I grew up in something called the East Side Triangle, which was a lot of people know it as Perkins Projects, and then the other projects across from it was Flag House, and then you had Lafayette, which was adjacent to that. So it was the East Side Triangle right there. That a little crazy bad news. All right, most definitely. Some fun times, though.
Yeah.
It was fun times. Came away with your life, you know.
Yeah, you had to. I guess you had to be fast, huh?
Yeah, you had to be something. I'm telling you, man. You had to be something, man.
Man, so what age did you discover your love for football?
I discovered my love for football at a very young age. My father passed away when I was 4 here in Baltimore. He was murdered, and I watched him play. I watched him play basketball. I watched him play football, and I gravitated more to football because I had a lot of frustrations at times, and I was allowed to then release those frustrations in a controlled manner. That's what I found. I really love it. That's I don't play defense. Well, actually, I play offense as well as defense, but I know I was going to play some defense.
Yeah. What offensive positions did you play?
I play wing back. I also play the little wide receiver. That's when I was fast. Those fast days. those are two that I played outside, on in reference to offense. On defense, I played multiple positions. I played a little safety. I played a little bit of outside linebacker. So it was a great transition. It was a great transition back in 98 when they were recruiting me and explaining that. Explained that to Virginia Tech. And I was like, oh, this is a good fit.
So coming out of high school, like, what was your recruiting like? Did you have a lot of offers? How did Virginia Tech come into that picture?
Oh, wow. And I always tell this story, and I give a lot of props to my cousin Taven Phillips, because originally Coach West was coming to see him. He's a safety, 6'1". He went to Mervyn Fowler. He was also a state wrestler, state champion in wrestling. From Mervyn Fowler. They were actually coming to see him like my junior year. I think it was like back in 97. It was my junior year there at Patterson High School. And I was really starting to flourish then. And I was showing off on them. I was showing off on the boys. It's like, who is this guy? Who is that?
Man, that's so. Then Virginia Tech. You always say that Keon Carpenter, rest in peace to a legend, by the way.
Yeah, man. My God,
he
man.
Was instrumental in you coming mm-hmm. to Virginia Tech, and how so?
Oh yes. This is great. I haven't talked a lot about this with any interviews. Back in 1998, which was crazy. Coach Pryor. Coach Pryor was here as a GA, and good old Lou West. They were recruiting me out of Baltimore. So when I came on my recruiting visit, we were preparing. It was in December, so we were preparing for the Music City Bowl against Alabama. The good old Sean Alexander and those guys, those boys from Bama. So they were preparing for that. And I had been on a couple of other recruiting visits, D1 offers that I had been on, and University of Maryland, Pittsburgh. I was going down to Florida State. They had originally offered me, you know, and stuff. So I was getting some looks. But the last or that final portion or that final piece for me was Keon was like, come on, man. Mike, see, you gotta come here. You're from Baltimore. I'm from Baltimore. I am the only Baltimore guy here, and I'm gonna pass the torch to you. So you're gonna pass the torch to me? Okay. Hold on one second. I kind of like other incentives about it. It wasn't a financial portion of value. It was a portion a value or a sense of value. Per se, that increased that hey, I'm needed here. Hey, I've always been a representative of Baltimore wherever I step. So, hey, let's make it happen here. And it was three things. It was three things that I always wanted to make sure that all the kids that I've been recruiting, I could also take this as a portion of structure. Go somewhere where you can play. Go somewhere where you can play. Go somewhere where your degree, there's nothing to be said about your degree. Then three, be away from home, but not too far away from home, you know? So those three things, those three things met my criteria at that time that I had made for myself. I had boots from Keon and P-Lo. edging me on, you know. Excuse me, Pierce and Prelude. Coach Prelude. Yeah. And it was a great recruiting visit. My recruiting chaperone was Emmett Johnson. So anybody know Emmett Johnson and Michael Vick were roommates. So that's like we got the chance to meet Mike before they were talking about the hype and things of that nature. Got to establish my own relationship with him before I even got there. So Mike was like, cool dude. It was just like family and love. That's why, that's one of the reasons that I also chose Virginia Tech.
Yeah, man. Like, I guess you get to Blacksburg, like, and you said, like, Baltimore, right? Everybody has a reputation. It lives up to its reputation. You said you were basically running for your life a lot. Like, how long did it take you to settle in Blacksburg and realize that, hey, like, I can kind of like let the edge go a little bit because it's a lot safer in this area and not everybody's trying to get at me every day.
Interesting question. Because I feel like I never left that portion of edge. It then became a portion of trust and that I would have to build within that institution. And then not just the institution, but also myself as an individual and maturing into a man compared to a child in the reins on you. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm getting tattoos, mama.
Yeah.
So things of that nature. Also, a lot of the responsibilities I didn't have a problem with or transition with. From just life, because I had younger brothers and sisters, and my mom, you know, made my dad passed, she remarried, and things were going. Then got divorced and stuff like that. So like, it was me taking care of my brothers and sisters. So the transition to college on a personal level, it actually freed me up a little bit. I'm gonna keep it real with you.
Fair enough. Yeah. No, absolutely. It's you know, everybody sees the on field play, but they don't always know about everything that goes on off the field. Like Aaron Rouse said, he was raising his brother like while on camp. Yeah. He was going home in the spring, working a full time job, and then coming back. And with the schedule that y'all have, that's crazy. That kind of stuff
yes.
is crazy.
One thing I can say about and speak personally on Aaron Rouse. Aaron Rouse came into my room with the Rover, the good old Rover Whitmer, where I was establishing leadership. and actually really getting my first years of starting attack. And still, I remember battling with Kevin McAdam for the number one spot, but maybe when they moved him over. But in reference to Aaron Rouse, we were the only two in that Rover Whip room with kids. So being able to have that relationship of someone that understood that drew me and him closer. He and I closer together. I felt some brother right there.
Yeah, he's a good dude. Yeah. A legend for sure. You came to Virginia Tech as at what position did they have you envisioned as coming in? And we know you ended up at safety, but was it always that Rover safety position?
Mm-hmm. I came in as a Rover. I was in that Rover. That was the position. They told me straight off the bat, "Hey, Corey Bird's got 2 years. You know, yeah, moving Bird, man. Yeah. You're not moving Bird, man. Hey, man, right. I ran into him one time in practice, just studying up, and I thought I tasted a little blood in my mouth. It was like running into a big wall.
Yeah,
him and John Ferguson. They're the only ones."
I believe that. Anyway, yeah.
Oh man, what was the question? Oh man, that was the best of ever.
I guess you came in as a, you know, because
not
players, sometimes they come in like Cam Chancellor came in as a two-star quarterback, ended up being Cam Chancellor, you know? So, I didn't know if, like, you came in as what you ended up being, because a lot of times there's a lot of changing and shifting around, but.
That is correct. That is correct. And especially at the Rover whip position, because it's so athletic. And we bring a lot of good athletes in. When I came in 99, originally Ernest Wilford was a defensive end, if you remember. But I came in at the role position and stayed all 4.5 years.
Ernest Wilford ended up being one hell of a wide receiver.
See, right?
So many Jacksonville avenues. Jaguar, yeah. Ernest Wilford, yeah. I remember.
Yeah, man.
Him and Andre Davis.
Get over Ernesto.
I saw you posted a video online with Shiron Stith, man. Nobody really – I don't feel like Stith gets the credit that Stith deserves in the running back timeline of Virginia Tech.
Correct. Don't. Yeah. Man, it's different when you see it, you know what I mean, and you're there and you're in practice with them because, of course, I was on that scout team defense and I was going to give him a few licks here and there. Because that was just my style, right?
Right.
And you don't understand how intricate that play of running back and your safety and linebackers. Because I think about Kevin Jones a lot. The way that we used to battle in practice, he was ready for Sean Taylor. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And Sharon was just one of those type of backs that not only came to work every day, but he was going to give you maximum effort.
No, that's a fact. And I mean, I feel like every room on that team, like every position group, especially defensive back, like you had to want it every day because there was plenty of people good enough to take your spot.
And I feel, yeah, and that was the case. And I think that, not that I think, I know that Jim Cavanaugh and Bud Foster, they also made it a challenge for me. Oh, no, you're not coming in here, and it's not going to be easy just trying to understand the defense and so on and so forth. You have to be able to see more. And what I mean by that is, not just the play, but what could they audible to and things of that nature, and adding that within your repertoire and feeling comfortable of making plays after you already know the play. You know, yeah, it's like going from being an average guy or a good athlete to a superstar, your all-star status. Things start to slow down. You hear a lot of people say that, you know, it's because the repetition that you've had. And then it becomes a portion of muscle memory. I feel, you know, that's how I was back in the day in the game, you know.
Absolutely. No, I definitely feel like preparation, like when you're prepared, like if there's a calmer feeling and like things don't get into your head as much, like the outside noise is kind of tuned out because you already know what you're supposed to do. You just got to do it, you know.
Let's do
first
it, man.
Is like, you come in like you know you're not prepared. There's the stress of knowing you're not prepared. And then, like, it's easy, I feel like, for everything to get in your head. But if you just come in, stay ready so you ain't got to get ready type of stuff.
Indeed.
Yeah, all you had to do was go out there and punish people.
Yeah. And then that comes to a full round. And I think I see some things, like, within Tech now and how we're transitioning. From coordinators to coaches and head coaches and things of that nature, and that's what I feel like is a portion that has been missing, of a portion of that energy that we used to have in practice, how our practice just used to be fired up. We did get in a couple of fights, you know, but
that's natural.
But it was all love. I wasn't gonna let nobody else punch him in the face.
Right.
That's my little. We're gonna get to tough because iron sharpens iron. Tough for Baltimore, don't y'all say? Yo, I know y'all. See,
look at the camera. So it's not Baltimore, it's Baltimore.
Others would be would sound more Baltimorean if they say Baltimore, Baltimore. That would be
Baltimore. Yeah.
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 If you say it like that, let it roll off your tongue like that, you'll sound like a natural.
Baltimore.
Baltimore. Right? You see?
Yeah, I get it. You got it now.
Right?
But to your point, like, if you're not fighting in practice, I don't feel like my team cares enough. You know what I'm saying? Like, I remember we'd have days, I only played through high school, but we'd have days in practice where my coach would come up to me and be like, yo, dang. It's a little lacking out there. I need you to go start some shit. And I'd be like, all right.
Yeah.
So I would. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Then we had a good coaches practice. Like that as well.
Yeah.
Get out there. Get him riled up, Mike.
Yeah. And to your point about iron sharpens iron, like I've had so many friends play at Tech from like Rock Carmichael, and then the people I've interviewed from like Ken Oxendine to Dwight Vick to all these dudes, and they say, like, hey, you know, practice was practice. Like, we practiced so hard, the games were the easy part because
it was so easy because
competition was in the room.
Yeah. And the thing of it is like when you think about it, if you continue on a path of consistency, it's back once again back to the muscle memory. It's once again back to developing and cocooning and then your metamorphosis in reference to your intelligence of the game and what you see, because Coach Foster could call something, and I'm like, hey, I see something different. We can make some moves. We can make some adjustments. Because then when we get off the field, he's going to say, what did you see? You know? One of the great coaching points right there.
Absolutely. It's a bit of a collaboration, you know?
True indeed. Yes. Yes. It's not just one thing. And that's what a lot of people assume. Oh, you're going to win the game because of such and such or this athlete or so on and so forth. Everything changed. It's all in the equation. Momentum, energy, play call, not just the play calling, but your matchups. Playing a little chess.
Plus, I feel like it's a respect thing. Like, there's a, like, for the coordinator to come over or your coach to come over and ask you, hey, what did you see out there? It's more of a, I respect your football acumen enough to, you know, to hear what you have to say and your assessment of what went on out there versus, I'm going to tell you what went wrong. This is what you got to do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I love that coaching style because it gave us the ability to flourish. It gave us the ability to be an athlete, because anybody can line up and run a play, but who can make a difference?
Right.
Is that the birds? We're going to have to get by. It's the day to close the door. We got the birds out here.
Oh, man. Hey, you are.
Baltimore birds.
Them Baltimore birds. Yeah.
How are you scrapping, man? These feathers flying.
The Orioles.
Yeah, man. Right?
But 2003, man, you ended up in the. I remember that Aaron Rodgers game against Cal. Y'all were busy. Y'all were busy. That game was crazy.
A heartbreaker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
you know what? I forgave Carter Wiley. I'm going to keep it real. We family here, right? I forgave Carter Wiley. We missed three field goals and we lost by one.
Yeah.
But so many other things. Like I said again, once again, matchups, momentum, different things within the game. Can change. It can make a difference, you know.
Absolutely. And I believe you finished that year with 131 tackles, which is ridiculous. By the way, that's crazy. that's like Luke Kuechly numbers. But
before that, before that was Luke Kuechly, see? Before that was Luke Kuechly, it was Mike Crawford out here kicking behind and taking names.
Right, number 21.
Yeah, man. And I'm so ecstatic about being in the record books for that 131. And not just being known, because also just not being known for having cancer, going through cancer, that cancer scare and stuff like that. Through that portion. Yeah.
Because you went from, you know, being born at 2 pounds, doctor bringing you back to surviving Baltimore, surviving Baltimore, getting to Virginia Tech, you're having this great career, and then you get this, hey, man, we found this lump in your lymph node. We're going to have to get it checked out. And then you had, I mean, your headspace had to be crazy at that point.
Yeah. And it, to endure something like that, and at that specific time, you have to have a community. And that's what I had at Tech. Not just community, I had family, you know. And some of the great doctors, Doc Lagan, they had me some specialists out there. However, I did come back home and get a second opinion. They said it was what it was. So we had to do what we had to do and find a way to win, because that's what Virginia Tech has taught me, especially in their nasty defense. They're nasty. So nasty.
Yeah. Very nasty. I miss it. I miss that era for sure. But hey, man, the words, oh, it was just swollen, had to have been the best words you've ever heard in your life at that point.
Yeah. Say again. I couldn't hear the last part. Please.
No, I was saying, like, you when they told you, oh, no, man, it's not, you know, no. The C word, it was just a swollen lymph node or whatever. That probably had to have been like music to your ears at that point.
No, it came back. I did 9 biopsies. It came back, the last one on my second, and they said that, yeah, it was. So it was, we gotten rid of it. They caught it at the beginning. Mm-hmm. But yeah, actually it was. And then coming back from this, just over these last 2 years, I've been dealing with something, and that came back as benign. Not the other ones.
Yeah, I think I saw your video we posted on Twitter when you found out that it was benign, and you can see the joy. That had me emotional. I was like, man, this dude, like, just found, like, he, you could just tell, like, hey, you didn't have to say nothing, because you could just see it, and you're like, man.
And I hope you could feel the authenticity. Because just think about it, like, with my company, the first portion of the company, MacG LLC, I was dealing with consulting and transportation. So I was actually delivering hearts, body parts, cancer medication, eyeballs, you know, before I transitioned the portion to the media. So I still had both. It's a blessing. It's because I feel like nothing is there to hold me back. Even if I forget the pain and all that other stuff, mentally, you know what I mean? Mentally holding me back. Do I have to consider how many doctor's appointments that I have to have in reference to radiology, blood work, and all of that stuff, man? It can get very, very tiresome and fatiguing. But God is great.
That's a fact.
Right.
So after Tech, so you come back, you know, you get your degree.
Right.
Yeah, which is a blessing in itself, right? Yeah. And then you oh okay Yeah, you get your degree, and then sorry, somebody popped in, and I was like, yeah. So you get your degree, and then mm-hmm. you played, you went to the league for a little bit.
Yeah, went to the Baltimore Ravens, coming out the home team. Hey, look, and I thought I was gonna get some more love too. Hey, man, hey Ravens, wait, hold on, where the camp? But my agent told me, look, Mike, that's going to be a tough nut to crack. I wasn't trying to hear that. I just came off of cancer. I can do anything. I'm a record holder here. Hey, show me some love. But understanding that the NFL is more business compared to just what you would see on the surface and just going out there having fun, lots of money.
Right.
It's most definitely a business that may take you out of it. And I'm gonna say it again, Prime Time, I love you, man. But God dang, baby, they cut everybody. You going to come back and cut everything?
Oh, 2004. Yeah, I forgot about man. Him.
The only dude they kept was BJ Sanders out of camp. Me and Coles Coles. Hey, look, me and Coles Coles were actually in camp.
Was Cordell Brown still there at that point or no?
C Breezy was there, but I think they were coming off they were about to come back from OTs, and then Deion signed, and then I didn't see my friends.
he wore some ugly number too. It was like 39 or something stupid. I can't remember what it was, but it was gross.
Oh man! Oh my gosh! I could have sworn it was like 51. But okay, I thought it was 51. Okay,
Deion?
I thought you was talking about Cornell. Oh, yeah,
no,
Deion.
No.
Yeah, Deion won 39. Yeah. I don't want to talk about him. Let's talk about my friends.
Yeah, Crush Cornell Brown, man.
Dude, oh man. So the Ravens were. I keep saying it all the time. Oh man, I should have went to Tampa Bay because Tampa Bay wanted me to just play the outside linebacker position. If I would have went to Tampa Bay, if I would have chose Tampa Bay, I think I would have been starting in the next year because the outside linebacker got hurt. And, yep. Then they went to the Super Bowl. I was like, God dang it, Michael, you're making all the wrong choices here.
Hey, man, it's hard to not want to play for the home team, though.
Oh, man, it's hard. It's hard. And then my ties with the Ravens, yeah, I think about this as well, right? In high school, at Patterson High School, I was a portion of the Jonathan Ogden Club. He had just formulated the club in 97. I was one of the officers. So I was going to Ravens practices and things like that. I was talking trash to Michael Jackson, the receiver Michael Jackson, not
the king.
Not talking to Mike Jackson because we had transitioned. Remember, the Ravens had transitioned from the Browns to the Ravens. Excuse me, got to hear this. Mm-hmm. And talking trash to those guys, and I was like, yeah, I'm gonna come back and see getting what did I tell Michael Jackson? I told Mike Jackson that, hey, I'm going to come back here and lock you down. And he said, by the time you get back here, son, I'll be retired.
That's crazy.
Oh, man, that's a good Mike Jackson story right there, man. I pray that he's doing well, man. He's a great receiver, dude.
Yeah, that room was crazy. Like, the DBs were crazy at that point. Yeah, Ed Reed, Chris McAllister.
Chris, D Stocks. But my focus wasn't on those guys because they was going to be running around with those fast receivers all the time. I was worried about that that safety position. I had Will Dempsey and Jerome Sapp. Jerome Sapp in front of me. And when I came into camp, and then they wind up trading, they wind up trading Jerome to the Colts, if I'm not mistaken. I was like, man, come on, Ozzie Newsome. You know if it was been me and Ed Reed back there, it's gonna be hella pay.
Right.
They step a wheel. Good old Dex.
He had an all right career, huh?
Yeah, yeah. The dude could play, man. The dude could play. I just felt like it would have been more helmets and the helmets loosening out there if it would have been me. That's the honest fact.
Yeah, there would have been a few more medical tent visits if you'd have been out there for sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Came to bring the pain, baby. Came to bring the pain.
Hey, somebody got to feel it, you know?
Somebody's got to understand.
And then afterwards, you know, you do all this stuff. What, mutual fund analyst, investment product analyst, managing director, fitness director. You did a lot, man. Or you do a lot, I should say. What got you into that field?
What really happened was this. After football, I bounced around to a couple of teams. And then it was just like, I'm going to use my degree. Like, I had gotten contact from some alumni from Tech that were at Wachovia Securities, there in Richmond, Virginia. And, brought me in. I excelled within a couple of years and then became an analyst for their mutual fund department, and adding funds to what financial advisors would be able to sell. And then I had to transition from there because then we purchased AG Edwards and they wanted me to move to St. Louis. And I was like, hell no, we ain't going. That's what I told my family, man. It's like that. So, Kevin, from there, and then it just rolled into a situation where, as I was transitioning from Wachovia Securities, I had an offer from Legg Mason to be an analyst for their mutual fund program, offshore and domestic. So it was a great time to just basically use my degree. But then, of course, and the great crash. The late 2000s right there, right?
Yeah.
that then put me out again to where I'm actually searching for employment. So then I have too many talents not to be able to create something for myself. I have the education, and then it was a portion of building confidence within oneself to be able to grasp with the differences, because it's very hard in entrepreneurship, especially just starting out and you have kids at the time, you know?
No, absolutely. Is that how Mac G Media was born?
Yeah.
Mr. So CEO Mac G, and yeah, president?
So, yeah. So look, check it out. So look, so from the consulting portion or the consulting business, and transportation, I then ran into some individuals and an old teammate that was working with a platform called Connect to Your City, and it was just up and coming and getting off the ground. I helped them with some sales and things like that, and the commission from that, I just transitioned it into, instead of taking cash, I just transitioned it into another business. So then I could go ahead and just purchase not just my network, TV, you get your radio as well, but also be a portion of the platform as well, where there's over 210 channels. So I can do some syndication and things of that nature. So I have some flexibility.
Man, that's awesome. And then obviously we see, like, now you're at football camps, it looked like basketball camps, you're getting the people hyped with all these Hokies. You're rapping, like you're doing all
don't put me out there. I'm not a lyricist.
Hey, bro.
I'll put some music together. I do have a decent and some musical talents, but
did you not rap the theme for the ass kicking chicken bowl?
No. That wasn't me rapping. No, that's not me rapping. No. We had paid some people that.
But yeah,
they gotta,
hey, man,
they gotta go be talking about me.
I feel bad that it's gotta be Shane, man.
It's gotta be Shane,
but I need the Hokies to. I need Brent Pry needs that stamp, and I need to kick the door in this year. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Hey, I talked to Coach before. With this spring game. I had did a lecture for personal finance class with Dr. Alex White, just encouraging those youngsters. It's on YouTube, guys, and also on MacG TV.
Check that out.
You gotta check it out. Golly, what was I saying? I was messing around. Oh.
You said you were lecturing a class.
I was doing a lecture, and I got a chance to talk to Coach Pry before the before spring practice. And he said anything that he could do for Keon, he was monumental to him as well as a player. He was a great guy. And anything that we needed, so like. We're going to get the Hokies down there, the Hokies tailgating against South Carolina. We're going to have some cornhole, some push-up contests going on. We're also going to have the chicken competition, the ass-kicking chicken competition, where there will be a reward of $1,000 in cash up for grabs, guys. So $1,000 up for cash, $500 for first place. Also, you'll get a signed Michael Vick jersey, NSU, the brand's spanking new. You can get those at MikeVick.com. You guys, you're not going to get the signed one, though. The second place for the chicken competition is $300. In third place is $200. Also, I will be offering a media contract. The top chicken contenders will be able to show their recipe and also be on my platform as well and get them some exposure and amplify their brands. So, yes, we're going to get the community involved. We're going to get South Carolina involved, Virginia Tech involved, because you also got to remember that you're right back down there against Georgia Tech. You're right back there in Atlanta. So why not have some establishments that you're comfortable with, and maybe you'd like a cuisine or dish from there that's local that you could try. So yeah, it's just hey, look, Virginia Tech. We always said we was ass kicking chickens, and South Carolina Gamecocks always said they were ass kicking chickens. So we're gonna see. We shall see. Feathers gonna fly, baby.
Feathers gonna fly.
Yeah, put that on the shirt.
Yeah, you should. Feathers gonna fly.
No, see, we live. Oh man, they're gonna take my stuff. They're gonna take it.
Hey,
be blessed if somebody get it before me. Hey, man.
You got about 15 minutes from the time this ends to the time it goes on YouTube to get that.
I know.
Get that affair in order.
I need Randy. Put that down, Randy. You put that on the shirt, bro. Oh man.
How did this come together? How did you come up with this idea that you were gonna do ass kicking chickens?
Yeah. So the way that it came to fruition is kind of basically what I was saying. All of my years through Tech, of course we're the Hokies, but in the locker room and around campus, we always said we're one ass kicking chicken, and that's kind of where it came from. And then seeing the went online and then seeing those, what was it called? Seeing some shirts that said the Gamecocks were. So it's like, oh no, I got to make some shirts. And then then that's how the ball and the creativity all came into play. And then it just seems so right for us to acknowledge Keon, and he retired from the Falcons. And how you just saw how it all came together or started coming together, the ass kicking chicken concept between each team. And then I brought in honoring one of our valued players that had ties. And then it's really just showing the family feud, basically, because we have Shane and Torian Gray with South Carolina. Hey, and you guys can check out that interview with Torian Gray on YouTube or my app. And so I started to it's not just conceptualize, but actually go forward and create a structure to where we could appreciate and honor our players, our fallen soldiers, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah, man. Keon was awesome. I remember watching him play. He was special.
And awesome also in the community as well, like with Carpenter House and Shutdown Academy. And what is, like, I think one thing that really hit me hard about Keon and his death was that you were saying that you seen me at football camps, but I was doing football camps for my teammates. Kevin Lewis, I did some for Jason Murphy before. And I was working my way to Keon. We had talked about it. I had sent him some of my plans and stuff like that. And then a month later, he passed away. And that kind of ate at me a little bit. And I said I was going to do something for him. So now I'm going to do something for him. There's no more talk. It's time to get things done. 2025 is the year to do it. We'll get things done. The year to
Absolutely.
Do.
Absolutely.
And that's what you're going to see me all year. All year. Tap in. You're going to see me doing in the community. Being a portion or a bright light as I can be. As much of a bright light as I can be. To the dark, things that may be negative, things that may hurt our feelings, things that may challenge us, things that may come before us. But my motto at this after this last cancer scare is, we shall dominate anything that comes in our path, anything that dares to stand before us.
Absolutely. So you are cancer free. Right.
Yes. Still, but I'm still working in my plan. Still working with some medical issues from that. So with the tumor and stuff like that now. Mm-hmm. So, but I'm blessed. I'm good. I'm moving. I'm shaking. You're gonna see Mike C touch more than the sky if you get your microscopes out.
Absolutely.
Yeah, man.
But hey, man. It's been a pleasure to have you on my platform to talk about, you know, everything. You know, you're a great Hokie, great dude in the community. I love what you're doing for Keon Carpenter and all the other Hokie alum and future Hokie alum. You know, you know what that sign says when you walk out of that tunnel. So
yeah, you got reach for greatness, baby. Let's go.
Absolutely, man. Hey, we're gonna see you in Atlanta.
You got to come on down. Come in. Hey, look, yeah. I'm gonna save a spot for your podcast. I'm gonna save you a booth if you really coming down. Let me know.
I'm gonna be in Atlanta for that. Yeah, I have I'll a sickness a where I go to all the Hokie stuff.
Okay.
Well, like, not all of it, but like, I mean, I have season tickets. And my aunt, she lives in Atlanta. I would have gone anyway. But yeah, I really, you know, I've always been, I mean, they brought me great joy and mm-hmm. obviously heartache, but that's sports my whole life. So like now that I'm in a position to where I can enjoy the fruits of my labor, and that usually goes to going to Virginia Tech events, and I enjoy Blacksburg a lot. It's a nice change of pace from Northern Virginia, and obviously Atlanta's fun, right? I've done Nashville, I've done Louisville, I've done I've been to Atlanta for the Alabama massacre in 2013, so like I'm definitely gonna be there.
Okay, all right, all right. Hey, and make sure people you guys get that ass kicking chicken wear. Y'all got to get some ass kicking chicken wear. The merchandise is Mac G World. Oh, excuse me, Mac G Inspire World. And the links will be below. Boop, boop.
Right. Yeah. I'm gonna put it in the bio of the episode for sure.
Yeah, man. So yeah,
Mike, man. I appreciate you taking the time to come on here and do this for real. Absolutely. And as always, brother, go Hokies.
Go Hokies, baby.